Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Our musical trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Question number one, it was on this day, back in which year and where, that the very first FM radio station opened? Was that A, 1941, Nashville, Tennessee? Was it B, 1955, Chicago, Illinois? Was it C, 1964, New York City, New York? Or was it D, 1970, Los Angeles, California? First FM radio station. When and where did that happen? And question number two, it was on this very day, back in 1973, that the Robert Joffrey Dance Company opened the presentation, Deuce Coupe Ballet, based on the music of A, the Beatles, B, Bob Dylan, C, the Beach Boys, or D, Bruce Springsteen. 1973, ballet. The answers to these two important musical trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of March the 1st. Well, it was on this day, back in 1810, that composer Frédéric Chopin was born. He made an extended tour to the British Isles, where he struggled under an exhausting schedule, making his last public appearance on November the 16th, 1848. He then returned to Paris, where he died on October the 17th, 1849, at the age of 39. His body was buried in a Paris cemetery, but his heart was interred at a church in Warsaw, near the place of his birth. Chopin, born on this day in 1810. And it was 88 years ago today, back in 1931, that the Star-Spangled Banner was adopted as the American national anthem. The song was originally known as Defense of Fort McHenry. Our national anthem, 1931, today.
This ain't no disco. It ain't no country club either. This is L.A. All I want to do is have a little fun before I die. Sit the man next to me out of nowhere.
Sheryl Crow's All I Want to Do introduces our country music news. It's entitled A Winding Road, and it's written by Nicole Pager and published in Spry Magazine, February 2019 edition. More than a decade after surviving cancer, Sheryl Crow remains a powerful voice for prevention. Sheryl Crow is a little bit closer to feeling fine, as the lyrics of her 1996 hit, Every Day is a Winding Road, say. Since her stage 1 breast cancer diagnosis in 2006, now the Grammy Award-winning songstress is on a mission to remind the masses to stay on top of their annual exams. Getting a mammogram is definitely something no one looks forward to, but a routine mammogram is how I detected my cancer, says Crow. More than a decade after receiving a clean bill of health, Crow, 57, no longer fears the cancer word. Cancer has forever left a mark on my life and is now a part of my identity, but it's not something I think about on a daily basis, she says. Instead, she makes the most out of her present, which includes riding horses with her sons at their Nashville, Tennessee home. I'm usually introduced as a Grammy winner and cancer survivor. I have the dubious honor of being a spokesperson for breast cancer, early detection, and 3D mammograms. That has given me the opportunity to talk to what has made up a large population of my fan base, moms, daughters, now some grandmothers, and a platform to reach out to people about advocating for themselves and being diligent. My kids motivate me to stay healthy. I want to be around to see them get married, and I want to meet my grandkids. Playing guitar keeps my arms toned, especially when you consider you're holding your arms up for 2 hours a night and carrying your equipment. But it also comes down to my DNA. My parents are pretty fit. We are small, lean people with high metabolism. I think saving the planet should be important to everybody. We forget that just because we're not going to live forever, there will be people after us on Earth. My parents always used to say, when you camp, you've got to leave the campground nicer than the way you found it for the next person. Our family recycles. We turn off the lights. We don't leave the water running. If you spend more time in nature, you are more apt to defend it. My kids and I are surrounded with nature and animals at all times. We have 3 dogs, 2 cats, several amphibians, geckos, and a bearded dragon. We have 3 longhorn cows, and we've had as many as 22 horses. I think animals, in general, are the great leveler of emotions. I'm currently finishing up my next album. It'll come out in early spring, and it's a highly collaborative record with people I've loved and been inspired by since I was a kid. I still get a rush when I take to the stage. Yes, there are some nights when I feel like, oh gosh, I'd rather just stay in and watch a movie. But those often end up being the nights I have the most fun. You can be really exhausted and feel like you don't have anything to bring and wind up having your best show. There's something nice about the unpredictability of it. Vladimir Horowitz performing Chopin's Polonaise in A-flat major introduces our classical music news. It's a biography by Arthur Hadley and published in Encyclopedia Britannica about Frédéric Chopin. And he was born on this day back in 1810, March the 1st, near Warsaw. Now in Poland, Chopin was a Polish-French composer and pianist of the Romantic period, best known for his solo pieces for piano and his piano concerti. Although he wrote little but piano works, many of them brief, Chopin ranks as one of the music's greatest tone poets by reason of his fine imagination and fastidious craftsmanship. As a pianist, Chopin was unique in acquiring a reputation of the highest order on the basis of a minimum of public appearances, only about 30 in the course of his lifetime. His original and sensitive approach to the keyboard allowed him to exploit all the resources of the piano of his day. He was inexhaustible in discovering colorful new passage work and technical figures. He understood, as no one before him, the true nature of the piano as an expressive instrument. And he was able to write music that is bound up with the instrument for which it was conceived and which cannot be imagined apart from it. His innovations in fingering, his use of the pedals, and his general treatment of the keyboard form a milestone in the history of the piano, and his work set a standard for the instrument that is recognized as unsurpassable. Chopin's works for solo piano include about 61 mazurkas, 16 polonaises, 26 preludes, 21 nocturnes, 20 waltzes, 3 sonatas, 4 ballads, 4 scherzos, and many individual pieces, as well as 17 Polish songs. As a composer, Chopin had the rare gift of a very personal melody, expressive of heartfelt emotion. And his music is penetrated by a poetic feeling that has almost universal appeal. Although romantic in its essence, Chopin's music has a classic purity and discretion without a sign of exhibitionism. He found within himself and in the tragic story of Poland the great sources of his inspiration. The theme of Poland's glories and sufferings was constantly before him, and he transmuted the primitive rhythms and melodies of his youth into enduring art forms. From the great Italian singers of the age, he learned the art of, quote-unquote, singing on the piano, and his nocturnes reveal the perfection of his style and delicate charm of ornamentation. Though Chopin squandered too much time on the drawing room Parisian aristocracy and disappointed critics who valued artistic worth only in terms of large-scale achievement, he was immediately recognized at his true worth by more discerning contemporaries who were astounded by the startling originality he reconciled with exquisite craftsmanship. Present-day evaluation places him among the immortals of music by reason of his insight into the secret places of the heart and because of his awareness of the magical new sounds to be drawn from the piano. Happy birthday, Chopin. John Coltrane performing My One and Only Love introduces our jazz and blues music news. It's put out by Pitchfork.com, entitled John Coltrane 1958 Vinyl Box Set Announced. It captures the beginning of the jazz giant's rise to prominence. A new John Coltrane box set has been announced, Coltrane 58. The Prestige Recordings compiles the 37 songs Coltrane recorded for Prestige throughout that year. Included are definitive versions of Lush Life, Lover Come Back to Me, and Stardust. 1958 was Coltrane's breakout year, and he was still 2 years away from emerging as a bandleader. But his membership in ensembles led by Miles Davis and Thelonious Monk had propelled him into the spotlight as one of jazz's most exciting and controversial figures. Coltrane 58 serves as a window onto the shock and awe, and eventually deep appreciation Coltrane generated during this period when his quote-unquote sheets of sound approach pushed the bebop ideal of slaloming through a tune's chordal pathways to its extreme. It will be available on March 29 via Kraft Recordings with all the tracks remastered from the original analog tapes. The physical editions will come with extensive liner notes by Ashley Kahn. And in music research, we have this edited abstract of the scientific article titled Effects of Group Songwriting on Depression and Quality of Life. This is written by Michael J. Silverman, published in the January 2012 issue of Nordic Journal of Music Therapy. The purpose of this study was to determine the immediate effects of group songwriting on quality of life, depression, and treatment perceptions in acute psychiatric impatience. Individuals who have manifestations that put them at risk to self or others, or otherwise render them unable to care for themselves. Participants in the songwriting condition tended to have the highest average quality of life and lowest average depression scores. From the results of this study, it seems that group songwriting can be utilized to immediately increase aspects of well-being in acute psychiatric impatience. Black Magic Woman by Carlos Santana, who performed at the first Woodstock Festival, introduces our rock and pop music news. It's an article entitled, Going Back to Woodstock One More Time. This is written by Andy Green, February 2019 issue of Rolling Stone magazine. The original Woodstock was a defining event for a generation. It was also a logistical disaster, with historic performances taking place amid overflowing toilets, waterlogged tents, and a massive traffic jam. If Michael Lang had his way, the 50th anniversary version will be none of those things. Lang, who co-organized the original fest, is bringing his latest Woodstock to Watkins Glen, New York, on August the 16th, 17th, and 18th. His vision? A wider range of artists, including some big-name headliners he can't announce just yet, with many more comfortable luxury accommodations for fans. I want it to be an eclectic bill. Hip-hop, rock, pop, and some of the legacy bands from the original festival. He's equally determined to not repeat the mistakes of Woodstock 99, which culminated in fires and riots. I shouldn't have left the booking to others, he says, noting that he's personally booked many of the more than 40 acts already signed on this time. With this one, we're going to go back to our roots and our original intent, and this time around, we'll have control of everything. They aren't, however, going back to the site of the first Woodstock in Bethel, New York, which was converted into a 15,000-seat concert venue in 2006. They're good stewards of the original site, and they built a beautiful performing arts pavilion, says Lang, but it's a 15,000-seat shed. That's not Woodstock. So they're heading instead to Watkins Glen, where a reported crowd of 600,000 people flocked for a one-day event with the Allman Brothers Band, the Grateful Dead, and the Band in 1973. When I looked, I knew it was the perfect facility, Lang says. It was reminiscent to me of finding Max Yazger's Field.
You got your spell on me, baby. Yes, you got your spell on me, baby. Turning my heart into stone. I need you so bad.
And in local music news, we have this article titled, Pinecone's William Lewis Shines a Spotlight on Traditional North Carolina Music. This is written by David Manconi, published in the News and Observer on the 29th of December, 2018. The first day William Lewis went to work for Pinecone, the Piedmont Council of Traditional Music, he drove into downtown Raleigh and actually marveled at it. This was 2004, and the city skyline was smaller than it is now, with buildings like the Raleigh Convention Center and PNC Plaza still in the future. But for someone who had grown up in the country, Raleigh might as well have been Manhattan. I'm from a small country town in Georgia, and I was in awe of that city, said Lewis. I've never worked in a city before, and I realized I felt like I could make a difference here. I'm not sure why, but it seemed like the right place for me. Raleigh seemed like a place where any person coming in could have a great impact, and I'm a good example. 14 years later, Lewis has proven that point. Lewis, Pinecone's executive director since 2008, has helped make downtown Raleigh a bustling destination. He's had a lot to do with turning September into the city's fall music festival season. That's due to his efforts in helping persuade the International Bluegrass Music Association to move its annual convention from Nashville to Raleigh. Rebranded World of Bluegrass, the conference and accompanying concerts and street festival have been in Raleigh since 2014, becoming one of the city's signature events as well as a financial boon. It's drawn more than 1 million people and generated more than $61 million in visitor spending. This year, IBMA announced a 3-year extension keeping World of Bluegrass in Raleigh through at least 2021. Lewis was a finalist for the News and Observer Tar Heel of the Year, which recognizes NC residents who have made lasting and significant contributions in the state and beyond. Lewis had the sort of rural upbringing where you had to make your own, wherever you found it. It was only natural that the four Lewis kids spent a lot of time playing music while growing up in rural Georgia. Their grandfather had played drums in a jazz band during the 1920s, while their father was an amateur folk musician who passed down tunes to his children. Lewis went to Appalachian State University to get a degree in applied anthropology. There was a lot of old-time music in western North Carolina, people playing the same songs as Lewis's father. Noting the appeal of local music and its potential to draw outsiders, he started thinking about music-based tourism as an untapped resource. That carried over to Pinecone, which puts on a range of programming beyond the Bluegrass Festival, from concerts to school workshops. Lewis said before Pinecone you had folklorists and song catchers going around the Appalachians, but there wasn't a ton of focus on the Piedmont, even though it produced some of the greatest music. Charlie Poole, Earl Scruggs, blues, jazz, R&B, that's what we've taken up. Next year should be a big one for Pinecone. There will be another bluegrass festival in Raleigh, of course, in the fall. It also will be North Carolina's Year of Music through a new NC Arts Council program, Come Here, North Carolina. The state's music is the focus of the Oxford American's prestigious annual Southern Music Issue. There's something unique about folk and traditional music, Lewis said. People find so many different connections to it. It's not all nostalgia and cabins on the hill. Folk and traditional music touches on the full human experience, which includes race riots and slavery, songs about labor, civil rights, floods, murder ballads. It's very democratic, made by and for the people. We try to connect people to that. So how'd you do on today's musical trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, it was on this day in which year and where that the very first FM radio station opened. Was that A, 1941, Nashville, Tennessee? B, 1955, Chicago, Illinois? C, 1964, New York City, New York? Or D, 1970, Los Angeles, California? First FM radio station. Correct answer, answer A, 1941, Nashville, Tennessee. As noted in NashvilleBroadcastingHistory.com, by the late 1930s, the communications industry was in the throes of rapid change. WSM's chief engineer had been following the progress of quote-unquote high-frequency broadcasting closely. In 1941, WSM continued its role as an industry trailblazer by giving America its first commercial FM station at an assigned frequency of 44.7 megahertz. The station operated with an effective radiated power of 65,000 watts and cast a healthy signal into Kentucky and Alabama. During World War II, the station and the company contributed to the war effort. In 1947, the Federal Communications Commission reappraised its pre-war rulings and moved the commercial frequency modulation to 100.1 megahertz. In the process, the station redesignated itself WSM-FM. In 1950, WSM brought the first television broadcast to Nashville. A continuing leader in country music, WSM promoted the industry by helping to develop the Country Music Association. The radio station still broadcasts the Grand Ole Opry on Friday and Saturday nights. And the answer to our second question, it was on this very day, back in 1973, that the Robert Joffrey Dance Company opened the presentation Deuce Coupe Ballet, based on the music of A. the Beatles, B. Bob Dylan, C. the Beach Boys, or D. Bruce Springsteen. And the correct answer is answer C, the Beach Boys. As noted in a 3373 New York Times review, Deuce Coupe is a very attractive, enjoyable piece that can provide pleasure at several layers. That is, its richness, using dancers from both her own company and the Joffrey. Twyla Tharp has choreographed 19 separate sections, some very brief, to music by the Beach Boys. What remains, however, in Deuce Coupe, whose title comes from a Beach Boys song, is an unfolding human scroll of intricate patterns, delightfully timed exits and entrances, and moments of humor and beauty. Most of the time, Miss Tharp is out to entertain in Deuce Coupe as the Beach Boys. In the final lyrical cuddle-up section, the images of the rock generation, a girl held aloft by a group, and then a crowd gathered around her body on the floor, sum up a pop era rather than pass moral judgment on it. Deuce Coupe is a very American work. So, let's close out today's program with a bit of Deuce Coupe Ballet music. The Beach Boys performing Dance, Dance, Dance.
After 6 hours of school, I had enough for the day. I hit the radio dial and tuned it up all the way. I got a dance, 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 got a piece of it right on the floor. Dance, 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 right there, the spot is really hard. Dance, 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 got a piece of it mine.
Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. And as we leave you, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Content of this program intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Music Review is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast in the TRRS website, TriangleReadingService.org. Now, if you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me, Randy Thompson, at 919-832-5138. So long, until next time.
The spot really hard.